Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif says his country will not renegotiate the 2015 nuclear agreement. At least three Afghan security forces are killed and 14 others injured in a car bomb attack in the eastern province of Paktia. And Hungary says it cannot accept the European Union's budget and coronavirus recovery fund in its present form. This is World News, live from our Tehran headquarters. I'm Behruz Najafi. It's a great pleasure to have you with us. Tehran says it will not renegotiate the 2015 Iran nuclear deal known as the JCPOA as it was negotiated once before.
We will not renegotiate a deal which we negotiated. The deal was about give and take. It wasn't about one side asking and the other side giving. The fact is that the United States and other European partners started with 20 plus 10. They wanted 20 plus 10 years of restrictions. Iran started with none. We agreed somewhere in the middle, 10 plus few more. This was the subject of 2 years of negotiations. It will never be renegotiated, period.
Mohammad Javad Zarif says that the United States is still a member of the United Nations, so it should be committed to its obligations. He said that Washington must observe the UN Security Council resolutions as a permanent member of that council. He also said that President Trump's administration has been a rogue regime by violating the UN Security Council Resolution 2031, which endorses the Iran nuclear deal, the JCPOA. The top diplomat noted that Washington is not in a position to set conditions for Tehran. He urged the West to stop its malign activities in West Asia.
Is the West ready to stop its malign behavior in our region? Because they were not ready to deal with that, we decided to put those issues aside. When they are ready to deal with those problems of their own malign behavior in the region, when the United States, when UK, when France, when Germany are ready to put an end to their malign support for a terrorist regime, for violations of human rights in Yemen, for cracking down on people, for dismemberment of a journalist in Turkey by their very close ally, Saudi Arabia, then they can start talking about other things.
Well, Zarif says that the United States sold more weapons to the Persian Gulf than it did to other countries around the world. The Iranian foreign minister criticized the West for supporting the war in Yemen and the annexation of Palestinian lands by Israel. He accused the West of backing Israel's acts of terrorism, including the assassination of a top Iranian nuclear scientist last week. Political commentator Jonathan Fryer says that most European countries would agree with the Iranian foreign minister, and the party says the Trump administration is being malign in West Asia.
Most Europeans would agree with Mr. Zarif's personification of the American administration under Donald Trump as being very much a malign force in the Middle East, and the way that the Trump administration has targeted Iran with its so-called maximum pressure has indeed been a really quite immoral force in the region. One can only hope that when Joe Biden takes over next month that things will change very dramatically. And there have been positive steps in that direction. Mr. Biden has made it clear that he would like to get the JCPOA nuclear deal working again if that's possible, and certainly the Europeans would wish to support that.
Now, Hungary says it cannot accept the European Union's budget proposal in its current form. Prime Minister Viktor Orban, chief of staff, said that the bloc's proposed budget and its coronavirus recovery fund cannot take effect without Hungary's approval. He said his country is open to further negotiations, but it reserves itself the right of veto. He has stressed Budapest's stance as long as the EU seeks to link funding to respect for democratic norms, there will not be an agreement. Hungary, along with Poland, vetoed the bloc's 1.8 trillion euro budget and COVID-19 recovery plan. They accused Brussels of rolling back democratic freedoms by trying the coronavirus fund to the rule of law. And this as the bloc is investigating the two countries for undermining the independence of courts, media, and non-governmental organizations. European diplomats cast doubt on a post-Brexit trade deal with the UK, citing significant divergences between the two sides. A member of the EU negotiating team says that London and Brussels are working hard to overcome the gaps, but the final outcome of negotiations is still uncertain. Separately, a European diplomat warned that there will be no more concessions in the trade talks with Britain. He said the bloc's negotiators have moved to code within millimeters of the limits of their mandate. The diplomat has stressed that it is now up to London to compromise if a deal is to be reached. Time now for the news review program. Stick around. You're welcome. The United Nations General Assembly has adopted several resolutions against the Israeli regime and its expansionist policies.
We'd like to express our gratitude to all the states that co-sponsored the resolution and voted in favor of it. It is one of the principles of international legitimacy for the General Assembly to call upon Israel, the occupying power, to demand that Israel end its occupation of Golan Heights. The General Assembly today affirms that any measure that Israel takes to impose its laws and its sovereignty on the occupied Golan Heights are considered illegal, null and void.
One of the resolutions reaffirms Syria's sovereignty over the occupied Golan Heights. It urges Tel Aviv to withdraw from the Syrian territory it occupied in 1967. The document says Israel's unilateral annexation of the territory constitutes a stumbling block in the way of achieving a comprehensive and lasting peace. The UNG also passed four resolutions in support of the Palestinian people. The Palestinian envoy to the UN hailed the decision and called for their implementation.
The debate in this chamber, with the participation of countries from every region of the globe, is clear expression of international law and its respect by the international community. The exception is Israel, which refuses to abide by international law, flagrantly trampling the Charter, international humanitarian and human rights law, and UN resolutions, clearly having gotten too accustomed to violating the law with zero consequences.
Now, one of the documents demands a halt to Israel's settlement activities, describing them as illegal. It also warns Tel Aviv against making changes to East Jerusalem al-Quds. The three other resolutions affirm the work of UN committees operating on behalf of the Palestinians. The resolutions are part of a package of 20 pro-Palestinian texts that a 193-member UN body has adopted. Well, it's time now to discuss this, so joining me will be Angela John Gage, author and activist from New Jersey. And also we have Ariel Gold, national co-director of the Code Pink, joining us out of Washington, D.C. Let's go to New Jersey first. You just heard the story, the UN resolutions in support of the Palestinians. The question I want to ask you is regarding what happened under the Trump administration, especially because what Trump did and his administration is unlike any other previous U.S. administration when it comes to support for Tel Aviv and its expansionist policies.
Yeah, Trump has been doing a lot of favors for Israel, and I also believe assassinating Soleimani was one of those favors as well, clearly. And the Israelis, as the show was mentioning, they don't follow these resolutions. They don't care about international law because of the United States of America. We support Israel. Even if we're crumbling, we're going to support Israel, which is sad, obviously. But, Trump has done more than any president has done for Israel, and Bibi is very happy about that. And I think this has made the Israelis more confident in their measures of taking whatever measures they want to do to secure their security in the region.
So, Angela, what are the reasons for this, for that kind of support that Trump lent to the Tel Aviv regime?
Well, in my view, AIPAC and the Israeli lobby and other organizations in the United States have a basic death grip over Congress and all of our politics, media, and everything else as well. And so these presidents are going to play by Israel's tune. That's how it's been for a long time. But others were reluctant. Others weren't going to, make Jerusalem. They weren't going to take the embassy to Jerusalem or anything like that. They promised it, but Trump delivered. Trump did everything Bibi wanted. And, again, one of the greatest presidents for Israel from America.
Right.
Yeah, and so this is, again, going to bolster Israel's confidence to do even worse things, in my opinion, as you can see with the assassination of the recent nuclear scientist and all that. I mean, this is not good for the peace in the region or the world, in my opinion.
Okay. Now, let me turn to D.C. now. Ariel, But 190 plus countries, I mean, this is what they decided. And they want Tel Aviv to stop the occupation of Golan Heights. And there are so many other things, as you mentioned them in the intro. And I want to ask you, this is not binding, unfortunately, I mean, what the UN General Assembly adopts. I mean, is there anything that could be done in practice to be able to do something for the Palestinians apart from only lip service?
Unfortunately, as my colleague said, Israel is a country with no regard for international law, and the United States is a country with no regard for international law. And the United States has an enormous amount of world power. And so essentially these resolutions become incredibly toothless. Now, one of the upsetting things about the resolutions this year, which, as you said, they pass each year, is that Palestinians actually got fewer votes. Now, some of those can be explained, some of that can be explained with the rise of right-wing fascism globally. For example, Hungary switched its vote, and Hungary's prime minister, Viktor Orban, is a far-right fascist, and not to be left out of that conversation, is quite an anti-Semite himself, an anti-Semite supporter of Israel, which has become very, very commonplace. And I would say that Donald Trump spent 4 years courting evangelicals and doing the will of evangelicals, which is this incredible support for Israel, giving this massive green light to the Netanyahu administration to expand its apartheid policies. Unfortunately, we have some other countries like Switzerland, which moved further away from supporting Palestinians. And when we look at these normalization deals that we've seen in the past year, this throwing of Palestinians under the bus by numerous state actors, we see more and more that the necessity to continue building our people's movement for Palestinian rights. And thankfully, that movement is growing every day, including within U.S. Congress.
I see. Now, back to Jersey, Angela. I want to put one question to both of you, and please answer me briefly. What do you expect to happen? I mean, with somebody else, with Joe Biden assuming, power at the White House soon, would you expect any kind of change in U.S., staunch support for Israel?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Biden's packing his cabinet with Zionists, so I don't think anything will change. Maybe, like she was meant, lip service, perhaps. Maybe a little bit in a more lenient with things, but our undying support for Israel is forever, apparently. Every politician repeats this, so I don't see anything changing at all, honestly.
Ariel, your opinion on that?
I have to disagree a little bit with my colleague. Now, of course, as he said, Biden is incredibly pro-Israel, and the people that he's appointed, including Tony Blinken, are incredibly pro-Israel. But on the other hand, I was heartened to see Biden speak out the day before yesterday, sending a message not just to Iran, but also to the Netanyahu administration, that he's not going to let Netanyahu entirely dictate the terms. And what he said was that he intends to get back into the Iran nuclear deal. And that is a message to Netanyahu. And I think that we, as American people, and through Congress and all of the means that we have available, we have to push Biden as far as is possible. I mean, I think we have to keep our expectations quite low and reasonable because he is so pro-Israel. But there are some things that we need to push to see reversed, such as the recognition of settlements as illegal.
Okay, we'll wait and see. Thank you for your comments and contribution. Angela John Gage, author and activist, joined us from New Jersey, and Ariel Gold, national co-director of the Code Pink out of Washington, D.C. And that's the end of this edition of the News Review. Welcome back. The Iranian Foreign Ministry says that Tehran welcomes a new agreement between the Taliban and the Afghan government to press on with peace talks. The ministry's spokesman stressed Iran's support for peaceful solutions and the return of stability to Afghanistan. Saeed Khatibzadeh expressed hope that the intra-Afghan negotiations could lead to a ceasefire agreement. Representatives of the Afghan government and the Taliban announced they have reached a preliminary deal to move ahead with the peace talks. Well, that marks the first written agreement between the two sides following 19 years of conflict. The agreement was reached after months of discussions in the Qatari capital of Doha. Now, we had peace talks, negotiations, and a framework that was agreed upon. In the meantime, a car bomb explosion has targeted Afghan army forces in the eastern province of Paktia, and that has left several people dead and many more injured. Let's go to Kabul, the Afghan capital. Amin Alami, our correspondent, is there. Amin, bring us an update on that.
Well, it was in the evening, but a huge car bomb that rocked the central part of Ghazi, the capital city of the southeastern province of Paktia. A few minutes later, Afghan special forces arrived and cordoned off the area. Halim Fidai, the governor of Ghazi province, later confirmed that the adjoint patrol of Afghan National Security and Defense Forces has came under an attack. But many other security forces there, including police sources in Paktia province, confirmed that the attack happened after an attacker detonated a car, launched a car bomb attack in front of, very close to a convoy of Afghan security forces there. According to official figures, at least three Afghan armed forces were killed and at least 15 civilians were injured as a result of this incident in eastern Ghazi's province of Afghanistan. On the other hand, here in the Afghan capital Kabul, Afghanistan's interior ministry released a statement saying that at least 134 Afghan civilians were killed and over 340 others were wounded in 16 suicide attacks and 168 bomb blasts carried out by, according to Afghan Interior Ministry, the Taliban militant group over the last month. In the meantime, the rise of attacks, bombings and bloodshed in Afghanistan takes place while an ongoing intra-Afghan negotiations between the Taliban militant group and the Afghan government is underway in the Qatari capital, Doha. The talks are not only underway, but according to both sides, I mean the negotiating teams, have reached an agreement that paves the way for further discussion on the main agenda of intra-Afghan talks in order to reach an agreement regarding to bringing peace and stability here in this country.
That's right.
But in the meantime, the rise of insecurity and bloodshed in Afghanistan proves that what happens in Afghanistan on the ground contradicts with what the main players of intra-Afghan talks are claiming behind negotiation table.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Amin Alami, our correspondent who joined us from Kabul. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio. In the limelight. A vast expanse of Amazon rainforest, seven times larger than Greater London, has been destroyed over the last year as deforestation surges to a 12-year high under Brazil's far-right president, Jair Bolsonaro. Figures released by the Brazilian Space Institute, INPER, on Monday, 30th of November, showed at least 11,088 square kilometers of rainforest was razed between August of 2019 and July of 2020, the highest figure since 2008. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Guardian columnist Tom Phillips. The piece is titled, Amazon Deforestation Surges to a 12-Year High Under Bolsonaro. Stay with us for more of Tom Phillips's article. vast expanse of Amazon rainforest, seven times larger than Greater London, has been destroyed over the last year as deforestation surges to a 12-year high under Brazil's far-right president, Jair Bolsonaro. Figures released by the Brazilian Space Institute, INPE, on Monday 30th of November showed at least 11,088 square kilometers of rainforest was razed between August of 2019 and July of 2020, the highest figure since 2008. Carlos Whittle, a Brazilian environmentalist who works at Germany's Institute for Advanced Sustainability Studies, said the numbers were humiliating, shameful, and outrageous, and a clear sign of the damage being done to the environment since Jair Bolsonaro took office in January of 2019. This is an area a third the size of Belgium, gigantic areas of forest that are being lost simply because under Bolsonaro, those who are doing the destroying feel no fear of being punished, Whittle said. Bolsonaro's great achievement when it comes to the environment has been this tragic destruction of forests, which has turned Brazil into perhaps one of the greatest enemies of the global environment and into an international pariah state as well. Brazil's Vice President, Hamilton Mourão, tried to put a positive spin on the bleak figures as he visited INPE's headquarters in the city of São José de Campos on Monday. Hamilton Mourão claimed the annual increase of 9.5% was less than half the anticipated figure of about 20%. "We're not here to commemorate any of this because it's nothing to commemorate, but it means that the efforts being launched against Amazon deforestation are starting to yield fruit," Vice President Hamilton Mourão said. Environmentalists, meanwhile, who blame Jair Bolsonaro's deliberate weakening of enforcement efforts for the rise, scoffed at the interpretation provided by Vice President Hamilton Mourão. "This number is an outrage. It doesn't tell us anything positive about the Bolsonaro administration at all. On the contrary, it shows that despite the COVID-19 quarantine, environmental crime has increased in Brazil," Carlos Little said. Hamilton Mourão's comment about the smaller-than-expected rise was like saying that "we were expecting 300,000 COVID deaths and we only had 200,000, Whittle added. Christian Mazzetti, a Greenpeace spokesperson for the Amazon, said, "This is an even worse number than 2019 and a direct reflection of the Bolsonaro administration's anti-environmental policies, which have weakened the monitoring agencies and used misguided strategies to fight deforestation, such as deploying the armed forces rather than environmental protection agents. These numbers show us that we are continuing to move in the wrong direction than the one needed to deal with the climate emergency and the biodiversity crisis." The Observatoria de Clima group said soaring destruction comes as no surprise to those following the dismantling of environmental policy that has been underway in Brazil since January of 2019. "The numbers simply show that Jair Bolsonaro's plan has worked. They are the result of a successful project to annihilate the ability of the Brazilian state and its monitoring agencies to care for our forests and fight crime in the Amazon rainforest," it said in a statement. Hamilton Mourão said the figures, which were produced with information from the PRODE satellite system, showed most of the devastation was occurring in four regions of the Amazon: the Pará state, the north of Mato Grosso state, and the south of Amazonas state and Rondônia. Pará state, a long-time deforestation hotspot, was by far the worst affected state, accounting for almost 47% of the total deforestation. "Thanks to INPE's work, we now have a perfect sense of where we need to focus our actions in order to prevent illegal activities occurring," Vice President Hamilton Morrell told reporters, praising its brilliant scientists for their efforts. But despite a growing green government propaganda campaign, which recently saw Morrell take foreign ambassadors on a tour of the Amazon region, environmentalists and foreign investors are skeptical about its efforts to protect the world's biggest rainforest. During the three-day excursion, foreign ambassadors were not taken to any of the deforestation hotspots which Hamilton Morrell detailed on Monday. An activist dismissed the visit as simply a sham. In May of this year, thousands of Brazilian troops were sent to the Amazon rainforest supposedly to fight environmental crime, although many believe they are merely making things much worse. Carlos Rittel said one ray of light was the recent defeat of Bolsonaro's key international ally, President Donald Trump. Without the backing of Trump in the United States, the international pressure on Bolsonaro over the environment will increase, and it will increase a lot, he predicted. Jair Bolsonaro is one of only a tiny group of world leaders who has yet to recognize President-elect Joe Biden's victory, and on Sunday claimed without proof that unnamed sources have convinced him that the US elections had been plagued with fraud.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, Some Signs of Belief. Brothers and sisters, all the believers out there, we know that we would like to attain the highest level of belief, of Iman. Well, belief has some scientific, moral and social manifestations and signs, without which it is only a meaningless name. There are four signs of belief according to the Islamic teachings. Number one, believers provide valuable assistance to their Muslim brothers because their help is accompanied with compassion, honesty, and awareness. Number two, they do not have a luxurious and costly standard of living and do not commit offenses to provide for it. Number three, they are prudent and aware in life, especially in economic affairs. Number four, they take lesson from each other and each event immediately, and thus they are not inflicted twice from the same source. These are four signs according to one of the dissection of Islamic belief system that have been mentioned in the Islamic teachings. These four signs, if somebody is able to incorporate in their self, they are going to ensure that this person gets included in the category of believers. Then of course, and we all know and realize that there are levels of iman, levels of belief and faith. There are very high levels of iman beyond these four. These four are just the basic primary prerequisites that you need to fulfill, inshallah, to show those signs of belief in your existence. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing some signs of belief, and we mentioned that there are four basic signs of belief that are supposed to be present in every believer. Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam, the sixth infallible Imam, says, "A believer provides valuable assistance, has low expenditure, and is prudent in life, and is never bitten twice from one hole," which means he's never inflicted twice from one source. Now let's dissect a little bit what Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is trying to say here. Well, the valuable assistance is, you know, you reaching out to other believers, other Muslims out there. Look at Palestine, look at Yemen, look at Bahrain, look at, you know, Myanmar. There are Muslims being tortured, and they've been targeted by the oppressors. So what are we supposed to do as believers? Well, we have to extend a help and a hand of support. This is what's expected of us. Then having low expenditure of life. This is again something, you know, a believer's life is modest. A believer does not live an extravagant life. So this is where having low expenditure is of utmost importance. And if you look out, look throughout the history, all the believers, they lived a very decent, reasonable, and very simple life. Last but not the least is that a believer is not deceived by the same source twice. There is, you know, a possibility that we get deceived by someone, and then, you know, it takes a negligent attitude to be deceived by that same source again. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
Rudolf Giuliani, who's promoting baseless claims of widespread election fraud, talked about a pardon with President Trump as recently as last week. President Trump has discussed with advisors whether to grant preemptive pardons to his children and to his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and to his personal lawyer, Rudolf Giuliani. Trump talked with Giuliani about pardoning him as recently as last week, according to two people briefed on the matter. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times columnist Maggie Haberman and Michael Schmidt. The piece is titled, Trump has discussed with advisors pardons for his three eldest children and Giuliani. Stay with us for more of Maggie Haberman and Michael Schmidt's article. Rudolf Giuliani, who is promoting baseless claims of widespread election fraud, talked about a pardon with President Trump as recently as last week. President Trump has discussed with advisors whether to grant preemptive pardons to his children, to his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and to his personal lawyer, Rudolf Giuliani. Trump talked with Giuliani about pardoning him as recently as last week, according to two people briefed on the matter. President Trump has told others that he's concerned that the Biden Justice Department might seek retribution against the president by targeting the oldest three of his five children, Donald Trump Jr., Eric Trump, and Ivanka Trump, as well as Ivanka Trump's husband, Jared Kushner, a White House senior advisor has said. Donald Trump Jr. has been under investigation by Robert Mueller III, the special counsel, for contacts that the younger Mr. Trump had with Russians offering damaging information on Hillary Clinton during the 2016 presidential campaign. But he was never charged. Jared Kushner provided false information to federal authorities about his contacts with foreigners and Russians in particular for his security clearance, but was given one anyway by the president. The nature of Mr. Trump's concern about any potential criminal exposure of Eric Trump or Ivanka Trump is unclear, although an investigation by the Manhattan District Attorney into the Trump Organization has expanded to include tax write-offs on millions of dollars in consulting fees by the company, some of which appear to have gone to Ivanka Trump. Presidential pardons, however, do not provide protection against state or local crimes. Mr. Giuliani's potential criminal exposure is also unclear, although he was under investigation as recently as this summer by federal prosecutors in Manhattan for his business dealings in Ukraine and his role in ousting the American ambassador in Ukraine. The plot was at the heart of the impeachment of Donald Trump. The speculation about pardon activity at the White House is churning furiously, underscoring how much the Trump administration has been dominated by investigations and criminal prosecutions of people in the president's orbit. Donald Trump himself was singled out by federal prosecutors as individual number one in a court filing in the case that sent Michael Cohen, his former lawyer and fixer, to prison. Discussions between Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani occurred as the former New York mayor has become one of the loudest voices pushing baseless claims of widespread election fraud in the 2020 election, which Mr. Trump still proclaims publicly that he won. Many of Donald Trump's longtime aides have refused to do his bidding to try to overturn an election that President-elect Joseph Biden won by nearly 7 million votes. But Rudolf Giuliani has repeatedly thrust himself into the spotlight to cast doubt on the results of the election, which has ingratiated him with the president. ABC News reported earlier on Tuesday, 1st of December, that Donald Trump was considering pardoning his family members. The Fox News host and Trump ally Sean Hannity said on Monday, 30th of November, that given the animosity from Democrats directed at Mr. Trump, the president should consider pardoning his entire family. If Joe Biden ever became president, I'd tell Trump, pardon yourself and pardon your family, Sean Hannity told his viewers. Donald Trump is an avid consumer on Fox News, particularly of Sean Hannity's show. Such a broad pardon preempting any charge or conviction is highly unusual, but does have precedent. In the most famous example, President Gerald Ford pardoned Richard Nixon for all of his actions as president. President George Washington pardoned plotters of the Whiskey Rebellion, shielding them from treason prosecutions. And President Jimmy Carter pardoned thousands of American men who illegally avoided the draft for the Vietnam War. Donald Trump has wielded his clemency powers liberally in cases that resonate with him personally, or for people who have a direct line to him through friends or family, whilst thousands of other cases await his review. Pardon for Rudy Giuliani is certain to prompt accusations that Donald Trump has used his pardon power to obstruct investigations and insulate himself and his allies. Andrew Weissman, a top prosecutor for Robert Mueller, has said that Donald Trump's dangling of pardon for his allies impeded their work. In July, the president commuted the sentence of his longtime advisor Roger Stone, who had refused to cooperate with the special counsel's investigators, and was eventually convicted of 7 felonies. Last week, Donald Trump pardoned his former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, who had backed out of his cooperation agreement with the special counsel's office for any and all possible offenses beyond the charge that he had faced of lying to federal prosecutors. The Michael Flynn pardon raised expectations that President Trump would bestow clemency on other associates, like his former campaign chairman Paul Manafort, who refused to discuss matters from the 2016 presidential election with prosecutors in his final weeks in office. Mr. Giuliani has asked Donald Trump's campaign to pay him $20,000 a day for his work on trying to overturn the election, a figure that would make him among the most highly paid lawyers in the world. The staggering sum has stirred opposition among Donald Trump's aides, who worry that Mr. Giuliani has perpetuated the claims of election fraud in hope of making as much money as possible. Rudy Giuliani has expressed concern that any federal investigations of his conduct that appear to have been dormant under the Trump administration could be revived in a Biden administration, according to people who have spoken to him. Legal experts say that if Donald Trump wants to fully protect Rudolph Giuliani from prosecution after he leaves office, the president would most likely have to detail in the language of the pardon what crimes he believed Mr. Giuliani had committed. Federal prosecutors in Manhattan have since 2019 been investigating the role of Rudy Giuliani and two other associates in a wide-ranging pressure campaign directed at pushing the Ukrainian government to investigate Mr. Trump's rivals, namely Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden. The two Giuliani associates, Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman, were arrested in October of 2019 as they prepared to board a flight from Washington to Frankfurt, Germany with one-way tickets. They were charged with violating campaign finance laws as part of a complex scheme to undermine the former American ambassador in Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch, who Mr. Giuliani and Mr. Trump believed should have been doing more to pressure the Ukrainians. Prosecutors in Manhattan continued to investigate Mr. Giuliani's role in the scheme over the past year, focusing on whether he was in pushing to oust Ms. Yovanovitch, America's ambassador to Kiev, essentially double-dipping, working not only for Mr. Trump, but also for Ukrainian officials who wanted the ambassador gone for their own reasons, according to people briefed on the matter. It is a federal crime to try to influence the United States government at the request or direction of a foreign official without disclosing their involvement. Rudolph Giuliani has said that he did nothing wrong and that he did not register as a foreign agent because he was acting on behalf of Donald Trump, not any Ukrainians. Even as Donald Trump maintains that the election was stolen and that he files lawsuits aimed at delaying its certification, his White House is preparing for the final stages of its presidency. The end of any administration typically prompts a wave of pardons, particularly when a term has been engulfed in controversy, like Donald Trump's, in which several people close to him became ensnared in federal investigations. The pardon power has been used by many presidents in politically self-serving ways, whether it was George H.W. Bush or Bill Clinton, said Jack Goldsmith, a professor at Harvard Law School, citing how Mr. Bush pardoned six of his associates, including the former Defense Secretary Caspar Weinberger, for their role in the Iran-Contra affair. Politically, a pardon of Rudolph Giuliani would be explosive, Mr. Goldsmith added, but pardoning pals has been done before. Under previous administrations, presidents have largely granted pardons after they have gone through a formal review process at the Justice Department, where lawyers examine the convictions, discuss the ramifications of a potential pardon with prosecutors, and then provided the White House with recommendations on how to proceed. On several occasions, Donald Trump has gone against the Justice Department's recommendations and the advice of his own White House advisors, granting pardons to political allies and to celebrities. When presidents have deviated from that process, scandals have occasionally occurred, especially after pardons in the last days of an administration. On the final day of Bill Clinton's presidency, he granted a pardon to Mark Rich, a wealthy financier and longtime Democratic donor, who was considered a fugitive as he fled the United States to avoid paying taxes. Prosecutors in Manhattan investigated whether the pardon had been part of a quid pro quo, but no one was ever charged. At the time, Rudolph Giuliani, who had helped bring criminal charges against Mark Rich years earlier as a federal prosecutor, was deeply critical of the move, calling it a disgrace and declaring it a midnight pardon. No president has tried to grant someone a pardon for crimes they have not yet committed, essentially a prospective get-out-of-jail-free card, and legal experts say it is unlikely to hold any weight. In the case of Donald Trump Jr., Robert Mueller's investigation examined questions of whether his contacts during the 2016 presidential election with WikiLeaks and Russians offered dirt on Hillary Clinton amounted to campaign finance violations. Donald Trump Jr. was never interviewed by the special counsel's office and was never charged. In the case of Jared Kushner, he omitted several significant contacts with foreigners when he filed out a form for his White House security clearance, including ones with the Russians offering damaging information on Hillary Clinton during the campaign. Under federal law, it is a crime to provide inaccurate or incomplete information on the background check documents for security clearances. In 2018, the White House counsel and chief of staff recommended that Jared Kushner not receive a top security clearance because of issues that had been discovered during his background check. Over the objections of Mr. Trump's aides, the president unilaterally granted Jared Kushner the security clearance.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is part of a speech delivered on September 21, 2020 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, via video conference with participants in ceremonies throughout the country to honor the veterans of the Sacred Defense Era. The meeting was held on the occasion of 40th anniversary of the Sacred Defense.
Secondly, the Sacred Defense gave self-confidence to our nation. The confidence that you sometimes witness in a large number of our people in the arena of science and many other arenas, industry and other such areas originates primarily from the Sacred Defense. During the war, a 20-plus-year-old could rally a crowd and an army behind himself with complete power and self-confidence, and he would deliver a serious blow to the enemy. Well, such things give self-confidence and assurance to the people. The sacred defense succeeded in proving that the Iranian nation would be able to pass through the morass of an imposed war with honor.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want or need. My Lord,
my Lord,
protect me from dishonor. Grant me faith to be stronger.
Moreover, we achieved our movement towards technological and scientific innovation during the sacred defense era. This is because we needed many things during the sacred defense, but we did not have access to them. We did not have the necessary resources, but our pious and altruistic forces thought of building and manufacturing them. For example, the late Shahid Hassan Tehrani Muqaddam launched the missile manufacturing endeavor. Once, he as well as others asked to go and pay a visit to their achievements. Well, when we went there and witnessed that they had really begun the endeavor, well, we needed missiles, but they would not give them to us. The enemy had missiles and he would strike us with them. This made our talented forces think of doing something, and they did a brilliant job. They did it in the best way possible, which has continued until the present time. So, the movement towards innovation was another blessing of it.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.